Hello, this is David Brim, and I'm the founder of Orlando Entrepreneurs. We are the hub for Orlando entrepreneurship, and our mission is to connect, cultivate, and celebrate our local entrepreneurs. We bring together our local entrepreneurial ecosystem to help impact our entrepreneurs, their companies, and our local economy. Learn more at OrlandoEntrepreneurs.org. Now over to Josh Wilson to get forward with our show.
Good day, everyone. Welcome to the Orlando Entrepreneur Show. My name is Josh. I'm an entrepreneur. I travel around Orlando and I have conversations with people who are founders, investors, and serial entrepreneurs, like people who are building things for themselves and adding value to the community here. So on today's conversation, I want to have a chat with Ben Hoyer. And I first came into contact with the name Ben Hoyer when I was ordering a cup of coffee. And we're gonna do a little role play. It went something like this. I walked into a place called Credo Coffee, and I said, I'd like to order a cup of black coffee, please, medium cup of coffee. And this is what the person responded.
Cool, what would you like to pay today, Josh?
It threw me back because I'm ordering a cup of coffee, and they said, how much would I like to pay? And I was like, okay, well, I don't understand. Like, normally, you know, there's a set price. Why do you do this? You know, give us an explanation of why you asked me that question.
Yeah. So the answer that I hope you hear if you go into one of our shops is something like, we believe buying a cup of coffee is a big deal. In Orlando, there's no such thing as local coffee. And so you're having a global impact every time you buy a cup. And we don't want you to just buy something. We want you to own your place in the supply chain. We source all of our coffee directly. And then let you name your price so that you can join us in that positive impact.
Wow. Now, to the audience listening in, when's the last time you bought a cup of coffee and you even thought about the impact that you're having for, you know, people in, on the other side of the world where, you know, they're picking these beans and roasting this coffee? So why don't you kind of tell us about, you know, Ben, who you are and what you do, and then we could go into the story of Credo Coffee.
Sure, yeah. I mean, who I am. I grew up in Orlando. I was gone for a while. I moved back. I've been here now like 10 years. And when I knew I was going to be here long term, bought a house, had my family here and my kids here, I wanted the city to be different because I was here. And so as I started to look at who am I, what am I good at, who is Orlando, what does Orlando need, I started to realize this like opportunity to remind people that our quality of life is more tied to who we're becoming than what we have. So that with our large and small decisions, if instead of thinking about what are we going to get or what are we going to accomplish, if we could think about who are we becoming and make intentional choices around that, we would end up in a place where we like our lives better. So I just kind of set out on several years ago when we moved back here, trying to challenge people at all levels of affluence to make choices to move towards becoming people of meaning, impact, and community.
Now, where did you move from? You said you moved here about 10 years ago, bought a house, got really established. Looking at these altruistic views of what Orlando is becoming, where did you come from?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Lake Mary, so I was in Lake Mary outside, right outside of Orlando all of my, like, from as long as I could remember through high school. And then went off to college and then lived in St. Louis for a couple years, lived in Denver for a year. And then, you know, by the time we had kids, we were ready to kind of move back by the family. But Lake Mary felt suburban compared to living in the city in St. Louis and in Denver. And so we moved downtown as close as we could.
Nice.
Yeah.
What was your kind of your career? You went to college. Were you an entrepreneur right out of college, or did you have the corporate path? Because, you know, right now you're an entrepreneur through and through. Mm-hmm. Kind of give us a little bit of your professional upbringing.
Yeah. I mean, the only jobs where I've ever worked for anyone were like restaurants in college and high school. Like, I've never had a professional job. I was a religion and philosophy major. I like thinking about ideas. I just am unique, I feel like, among the people I knew in philosophy and religion classes, in that I like connecting it to practical action. And I think that, that part of me is what moves me in an entrepreneurial space. I like thinking deeply about problems, but not just as an academic exercise. I like then connecting that to practical action. So the coffee's a really good example. It's like, I like thinking about how, you know, there are places in the world, in our city and ourselves that aren't as they ought to be. And that I'll like myself better if I reject my tendency towards apathy. Like, if it's a big problem, coffee's a huge global problem. Like, and I would go to the grocery store and be like, well, there's nothing I can do about it, and buy the coffee that's on sale. And I just started to get dissatisfied with that answer. And so I like networked around, found somebody who was going down to Guatemala, working with a group of half a dozen villages, went with him, met the growers, got back here, met some friends, got them to give me a little bit of money to start a coffee shop, and just kind of hustled and worked hard. So that starting with that philosophy, kind of working my way down to something tangible. And that's been my, like, that's the entrepreneurial part of me that's able to connect philosophical problem solving to action that meets a market or a customer, you know?
Okay. And so coffee was kind of your first foray into this.
Yeah. But my first business stuff ever. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was like running volunteer projects with the Boys and Girls Club, and then decided, rather than raise money for that, how could I earn money for that? And then coffee was like, oh, Orlando's ready for some kind of a new coffee experience. This was in 2010.
Oh, wow.
And so that's when I started. And then 2010 is when I went down to Guatemala, met the growers, and then came back in January 2011. We had the coffee shop in College Park open and ready to go. And I had to learn how to make coffee. I'd never worked at a coffee shop before. And so they put the espresso machine, the first espresso machine I was able to buy, on the counter, and I had to have the guy show me how to use it. And I used the grinder wrong for the first 3 months and was making terrible espresso. But I had such a strong philosophy and was so passionate about it that was letting people name their price, that there was enough stickiness that people kept coming back.
Yeah.
And it kind of grew slowly.
So how'd you come up with this concept of name your own price? Because, you know, if I go into big chain, you know, coffee shop, they have set price. They know exactly how much the coffee costs, how much the cups cost. Everybody knows. It's on the app. It's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
How'd you come up with this idea of, like, let people name their own price?
Yeah. Well, it was really about, like, that philosophy of trying to create steps. Like, saying, no matter who you are, you'll like your life better if you become a person of impact and meaning and community. And the coffee was a way to make a positive impact at origin, in a place in the world where things aren't as they ought to be. But if they were just buying it, they would never think about it. They'd leave it up to me. And I thought there was a greater opportunity to disrupt their morning and make them think about their potential of who they could be if they had to, like, make a decision. So they don't get the luxury of just buying something and leaving it up to me as though it's my problem. We're all in this together. So when you buy coffee from anybody, you're sanctioning the system that they're in. And so I wanted to force that on them and go, no, it's not just me that's in this. You're in this too. This cup of coffee touches dozens of lives on its way to get to you. And so it's not just your afternoon latte. Like, it's a vehicle to make an impact, you know? And I didn't want you to miss that. And I knew that if I made you name your price, it would, like, stop you. It would disrupt your normal flow and you'd think different thoughts than you would normally think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So this is a fun question. What's the most someone's ever paid for a cup of coffee?
It's interesting. Like, so I haven't checked everybody out. And for a long time, I didn't even track what people were giving for their coffee.
Yeah.
So I don't have a really good record. The biggest story from a barista is somebody left a $100 bill for a latte. And I can't validate that, so I don't know if that's true.
All right, we'll just say it's true. I'll validate it. That there's
a $100 purchase. Yeah.
Come to Credo Coffee and taste the $100 latte.
That's right.
The only place in the world where you can get a $100 latte is Credo Coffee.
Yeah, that's
Orlando,
it.
Florida.
That's right.
It sparkled with gold. All right, so you started coming up with this concept. You went to another country to actually see the impact. How did that change your view on people, on global impact, on the decisions that we make here in Orlando? How did that change you as a person?
It's so kind of mind-blowing to, like this coffee, the coffee that we've had since the beginning comes from the Quiché region of Guatemala. And to get there, I flew to Miami, from Miami to Guatemala City. In Guatemala City, we got on a little six-seater airplane and flew for 45 minutes up into the mountains, landed on a dirt runway, got in the back of a pickup truck, rode for an hour, met the dude who got to his house, who grows the coffee. He inherited a little bit of land from his dad. We walked with him then an hour up the side of the mountain, and it took us 20 minutes to walk around all of the coffee that he grows, sells once a year, and lives off of what he sells. And it is completely different to like be in a place where they're not even speaking Spanish, they're speaking Ishil, a native dialect in Guatemala, and realize like my morning coffee makes this journey to get to me, right? And your experience with the cup of coffee is completely different. Additionally, when you start to see how like content Samuel is in such different life situations, you begin to wonder like, why is discontentment so rampant in our country when we have so much stuff? And intellectually, like, it's not mind-blowing to like say to people your quality of life is not tied to the stuff that you have. But there's something where we miss that when we're making decisions about how we're going to spend our time, what we're going to work hard for, what we're going to prioritize as we move through the days and then the years. Somehow that truth about our quality of life is not tied to our stuff falls out, and we make decisions about what we'll do and how we'll spend our time based on the things that we'll get. And I don't know if it's the fault of advertising or just like human nature or something, but you can see it when you look at like gross national happiness studies or life satisfaction studies, that there's like an inverse relationship almost to stuff and happiness. I mean, there's a certain amount of stuff where they're directly correlated, right? So the extremely poor will like their lives better as they get more stuff. But studies differentiate on the per capita of a country. Like there's one study I read that says when you get past $20,000 per capita, there is no longer a direct correlation between happiness and income. They break apart, right? And that doesn't mean that you or I would be happy on 20 grand a year, but it can mean that a country as a whole, when it passes that dollar amount, they're no longer directly correlated. And so that's what the coffee project has done for me the most, is help remind me, kind of like a North Star, in as I'm deciding about who I'm going to be in the world, what I'm going to spend my time on.
The person you're becoming.
The person I'm becoming, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you're a married man.
Yeah.
What does your wife think about this, right? Like this idea of social impact, investing, and global impact, and name your price coffees, $100 lattes. Like, what does your wife think about the work that you're doing?
I mean, we'd have to ask her to get the real
opinion. We got her on speed dial right now.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, we're still together. So, at different points, we've sat down and said, is this the road we want to keep going down? So we definitely live as a team and make directional choices for our life as a team.
Yeah.
We have different levels of things that we're comfortable with, right? And we decided a while ago that like she'll have her own career, and that we're not going to work on this together. Like, we're better as a married couple than a working
business partner. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So, but I mean, she's fully on board with me on it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
God bless all the spouses and partners of entrepreneurs out there, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
That's probably the toughest job in the world, is maybe not being an entrepreneur, but being partnered or married to an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I think it's really, I mean, you know, I guess I'm 9 years into it now, and I'm gaining a deeper and deeper appreciation the challenges it would be to be forging life with me. Mm-hmm. In the ways that I like always want to rethink solutions or make stuff rather than just take what's given to me, you know?
Yeah.
And I can imagine that can be frustrating at times. Yeah.
So then walk us backwards. So you've taken us to Miami, to Guatemala, to the little six plane, you know, 6-seater plane up the mountain,
yeah,
to the back of a pickup truck, to a, you know, pretty much walking around and finding this. That's where we get the coffee. How does someone naming their price work its way backwards to impact, what's his name, Luis?
Samuel.
Yeah. How does that name your price coffee go back and help impact Mr. Samuel?
Yeah, so one of the things that I learned in that trip and has been validated in several different origin countries that I've visited over the years is that when you get to growers like Samuel does not have a farm. He has lived in that mountain region, and his family has, for generations. And somewhere along the line, somebody in the family got a piece of land and has divided that amongst his kids from one generation to the next. So each kid gets a little bit less than the generation before him, right? Mm-hmm. And then they are growing coffee because coffee grows there, right? With best practices they can. But remember, we're bringing clean water filters. They're drinking mountain stream water. They have dirt floor homes. So they are very vulnerable. Like in every country, right, the poor are the most vulnerable. And to get that coffee sold, he can't really sell it in the neighborhood that he lives in. It's an 8-hour at least van ride down the mountains into the city, into Guatemala City, where he might be able to sell it at a market if the roads aren't washed out. So what happens typically in these areas across, especially Central America, is where most of my work has been, is they sell to these guys, they call them coyotes, and it's all on consignment. And the coyote will go around and get as much coffee as he can from guys like Samuel, who are all growing it on a little bit of land that they have. Take the coffee, take it to a market, call it whatever he has to call it to get the best price, organic, fair trade, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And sell it for what, as much money as he can get it for. But then he has no bill of sale. There's no enforcement party to make sure he handles it ethically. He comes back whenever he wants and pays Samuel whatever he feels like. Mm. And if Samuel has a charge against him, it's vigilante justice. I mean, there is not infrastructure in this part of Guatemala. So what we do, our coffee, we have made friends with this guy, Walter, who knows everybody in the area. And that's who in the back of Walter's pickup truck, I went. And what happens is, all the Samuels in those villages know Walter pays more money than any coyote. And he pays them cash up front. So we're partnered. Walter is partnered with a financial institution in New York that likes this type of project. And so is not making money, but fronts the cash for the purchase of the coffee, so that Walter can pay cash up front. And now, as soon as they negotiate a price for their coffee, and as soon as they give it to Walter, Walter gives them cash. And Walter knows he can give them that cash because I have committed to a certain amount of coffee that I'll purchase from them. It gets on Walter gets it on a boat. So we're cutting out exporters, we're cutting out coyotes, and then it comes to us, and I pay back the financial institution in New York as I use it, right?
Wow.
And so what we've done is, what we've realized is that this is what we call direct trade. So it's not a global market certification. It's a group of people trying to get as close to the growers as we can, right? And so we have a friend, an importer, that does this, a similar project for us in Honduras. And we've just built a relationship with a group of growers in Chiapas in Mexico. And we have a relationship with a group of growers in Nicaragua. And it's all the nature of how it gets to us is a little bit different in each one. But this emphasis of a group of people committed to get as much cash to the growers as we can. It works best on a small scale. It's hard to make it large. But it works well for who Credo is in Orlando and creating this opportunity for people with their morning coffee to be a part of something rather than just buy a cup.
Rather than just some type of transaction.
Yeah.
It's actually creating an impact.
Yeah. So like for me, the deeper you understand it, and of course, everybody that comes into Credo doesn't get it all the way, and that's okay. But if they keep going down the road of asking questions and finding out more, then your experience of drinking that cup in the morning is really comforting because it's a good cup of coffee that tastes great, which is what you're looking for. but also you know it's doing something. And so you can start your day moving towards impactful living rather than just consuming.
It's fueling your soul.
Yeah, it has the potential to, for sure, yeah.
Because you're thinking of, you mentioned people of impact, meaning, and community. And I don't want to take this lightly, right? Because, you know, a lot of times we just see, we hit the button on our coffee machine, spits out some, you know, dark fluid, we drink it, it's just a part of our day. But you disrupt people's mornings and get them to think about the impact that it's having so that we could become people of impact, meaning, and community. All right, so this is just one of the things that you're working on is Credo Coffee to impact free trade and help get money to the people that are actually growing it and providing great product over here.
Yep.
And kind of cutting out some of the unnecessary pieces that may be actually hurting the growers, right?
Yeah.
But this is just one of the things you're doing with Credo Coffee. Why don't you tell us about what Conduit is and what Rally is? Because you're an entrepreneur. You've got a few things going on.
Yep. So Credo Coffee came out of this goal of trying to create small steps for people to move towards lives of meaning, impact, and community. And pretty quickly I realized, oh man, I can do that in other ways. So having baristas that are willing to get into conversations and challenge people to name their price breaks things up and is a step towards impact and build community because you have the potential to build relationship rather than just checking somebody out. But I realized that there were other things that Orlando was ready for that we could provide in a way that moved people towards meaning, impact, and community. And so Credo Conduit was one of the next ones that we started working on, which was how do we create a society of coworkers that recognize their work gets better when they come alongside of each other. And so Credo Conduit has been a project kind of evolving over the last 4 or 5 years. In the last 2 years, its current iteration, we're in a building at just on the north side of Colonial on Orange Avenue, about 9 or 10,000 square feet. And we have different levels of membership for folks, but we create an application, then an interview process. So we're trying to cultivate Orlando's creative class. Anybody in any industry or sector whose competitive advantage is their creativity, and then that wants to be a part of a community that recognizes their work will get better as they bump up against each other. And so I think we have like about 140 different people working out of Credo Conduit right now.
So the people that work here, they're creatives, and their competitive advantage against the marketplace is their creativity.
Yeah.
So give me an example of how that is different than, you know, let's just say I make chairs, right?
Uh-huh.
Like how would someone, you know, who works here, how would they have a competitive advantage or what does that look like?
Yeah. I mean, I think that if we're talking about a chair maker, it would be like someone who's not merely like commoditizing the chair and getting the lowest cost from China and the highest margin sale. But so they're not beating the market because of their price necessarily. In chairs.
Yeah.
They're beating the market. People buy their chairs because they're a creative solution to a problem. So whether that's a smart chair that has power in it and charges your phone, or its design is more ergonomic and beautiful than other chairs, is anybody that their competitive advantage is their creativity. So like right now, one of the companies working out of here is a nonprofit called Feeding Children Everywhere. And they their marketing department works out of here. Their production facility is in Longwood. But they are working to solve hunger issues across the world and here in the States. What's really interesting to me, they started with food packing events that a lot of nonprofits do, where you form a line and you make a dehydrated meal in a kit that goes in a bag and you add water. But what they started doing was realizing that there was need for that, not just in Sub-Saharan Africa or in India, but a lot of places in the States. So they started drop shipping it to places in the States. But then they realized that, like, in addition to that, there were other food staples, and they've created this new product called Full Cart, where anybody anywhere can request a week's worth of groceries that's a mix of grocery staples and Feeding Children Everywhere's product. And for the cost of shipping, it'll come to your door, right? And then they're building corporate partnerships to help fund the process. So they have really creative solutions that they're aiming at this problem. So they're a nonprofit working on hunger issues, but their competitive advantage in that space is they are more creative than their competitors, right? Mm. And so that's like a kind of, for us, that's like right in the sweet spot of who fits here, right? So there's marketers, there's designers, there's online sales funnel people, there's talent agencies, there's bloggers, there's photographers, there's filmmakers, League of Women Voters. There's all kinds of folks in here. But the point is that their competitive advantage is their creativity.
See, I like that.
Yeah.
So that's, we're downtown on North Orange Avenue, right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And what do you see the vision of Conduit becoming?
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, the motivation really isn't any deeper or broader than cultivating networks of meaning, impact, and community. So, like, I started out on this mission with Downtown Credo that says, man, I'll like my life if I'm this kind of person, and if I can create networks of people that are like this, Orlando will be a better place to live. And just the mission wasn't any deeper than that. Now, as I've gotten into it further and my family has grown, I'd like it if those ventures make money so that I'm not broke or a martyr, right? And they are, and so that's great. But I don't have a vision past, let's continue to cultivate networks of meaning, impact, and community in ways that are available to us. Yeah. That's really how I got into Rally, too, was like there are entrepreneurs and successful business folks, and there are people who have the seeds or the beginnings of an idea. And if I could help innovative philanthropists move towards kind of innovative entrepreneurs and especially social entrepreneurs, they'll both experience a different kind of impact and community that they'll like their lives better and ideas will accelerate faster. And so that was really my motivation to moving into Rally, the Social Enterprise Accelerator, is it matched that mission of cultivating networks of meaning, impact, and community.
So and we interviewed Rob Panapinto on the show, and he's one of the founders of Rally, and you guys are good friends and work a lot in this stuff. How does Rally, which is a social enterprise accelerator, Credo, which is an impact coffee roastery and dispensary, is that the right word?
I don't know.
What's the right word for coffee?
We have retail locations, and then we roast the coffee.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then Conduit, a co-working place where creativity is the competitive advantage. How did these all connect and work together in your world? Because you're doing a lot of stuff. How do they all connect together?
Yeah. I mean, they connect together on that mission.
Yeah.
Right? And so when people say, it seems like you're doing a lot of different things, I could say, I understand how from the outside it can look like that.
Yeah.
But remember that I feel like what I'm doing is creating, popping up little greenhouses for people to move towards meaning, impact, and community. Creating the environment where if you explore inside that environment, you'll move towards meaning, impact, and community. And that involves collaboration and putting my arm around a certain number of people and saying, let's go over here together, let's make this space together. And I've learned that's the thing that I'm really good at, is like coalescing a group of people and saying, let's build this thing together. Mm. So then my job is the same in all of those, is cultivating these networks of people. And as I've had to do that in different spaces, I've learned different sorts of things, right? Mm-hmm. So the community work that I started out doing before we even started coffee has grown into this nonprofit called Orlando Together that I'm the board chair for, because in cultivating networks around service in the Paramore Corridor, I really got deeply acquainted with the racial divisions that remain in our city. And so I learned that and leveraged that to help start Orlando Together, which is working to undermine racial divisions wherever we find them, right? So for me, the work is always the same. It's just I learned different expertise in kind of doing that work.
Nice. All right. So have you always been like this? Like if I went and talked to your mom and your dad, and I was like, all right, Ben, 5 years old, like, did you see this path for him? Like, have you always been like this, or was there some type of event in your life that kind of helped shape this?
What do you mean, like this?
When I say like this, entrepreneurship, right? Social entrepreneur, like passionate about helping people create impact, meaning Because this is not the norm.
Okay.
Right? The norm in America is, what iPhone do you have?
Yeah.
What kind of vehicle do you drive? How many square feet is your house?
Yeah.
You know, and how many, whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, I grew up with a family that was focused on serving their community. My dad helped start several different nonprofits, and I didn't intentionally set out on that road. But looking back, I realized the stage was set for me to go down that road.
Yeah.
I did always feel like I could think of better ways to do things. And like in my work with entrepreneurs, that's a good telltale sign. It's like, if they're always trying to like remake the wheel, then like I can make a better wheel, you know? Like that's like, you need part of that in order to have the drive to want to solve problems.
Yeah. So kind of this is the environment that you grew up in, was being exposed to empathy, right? Being exposed to the pains of this world.
Yeah.
And you didn't want to just kind of ignore that. You said in the beginning of the interview, it's like you wanted to fight against apathy, you know, being apathetic towards people's pains or the world's issues. Have you ever ran into a situation where you just wanted to throw in the towel and just say, you know what, I feel like I'm fighting uphill for meaning and to try to create a sustainable, you know, living. Have you ever come up against a wall where you were just ready to throw it all in?
I mean, all the time.
Yeah, every day, right?
Yeah. I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, you know, really a lot of credo started with me when I moved here, then going, okay, like, I want the place to be different. I'd like to serve it. And finding something that I cared about to partner with. And giving myself permission to be honest and say, oh, I don't actually care about this problem. And in order, realizing it's just to be honest with myself, like, sure, this issue is valid and important, but it doesn't actually move me. I don't really care about it.
Yeah.
And putting it away and then looking for another one, knowing I care about something, what is the thing I actually care about? And I started first with the Boys and Girls Club at the Coalition for the Homeless.
Yeah.
Because I thought they're working with kids who are living at the Homeless Coalition, and those kids did not make a choice to be there. And I'd love to help them direct those kids in positive places for the time that they're at the Coalition for the Homeless. And really grabbing my friends to plan things for the Boys and Girls Club is what got me started. And it's like a flywheel. I think empathy is a thing that, it's like a muscle that if you're not working it out, it can dwindle away, right? It's a muscle that you need to work out, right?
Yeah.
And so I started working out that empathy muscle and realized, oh man, I care a lot and I'd like to help other people move towards this. And then I started problem solving and went to Guatemala and down the road.
And now we have Credo and Rally and Conduit.
Yeah.
What's for those listening in the audience, what's the risk of becoming apathetic?
Like
to the pains of this world? Like we drive by and we see people's pain every day. Like we're driving down the road and we see people holding signs, I'm hungry.
Uh-huh.
We see people sleeping on the side of the roads, or we hear of issues of world trade or sex trafficking or you know, name the issues.
Yeah.
This world doesn't lack for issues,
right?
But what's the danger of becoming apathetic to the pains of this world and other people?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I'll say is, like, one of the things I realized when I started trying to be a person who cared about my city was that most of what I saw was people that looked like me and were at a place of life like me. So if you start looking at who you normally interact with, most people, the contact list in their phone look like them in way more ways than they don't.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the similar economic status. Their skin color looks the same. Their sexual preference looks the same. Most of the people that are in your contact list look like you. Then it gets worse because you start to realize most of the people that live around you are very similar. The streets that you drive down is drive down people like you. And so what happens a lot of times is the problems of the world that we're exposed to are just what you said, like people that we pass by just briefly on the street, right, that are holding a sign up, or news stories that we read. We don't actually know people that are in different situations.
Mm.
And so the first thing I started doing was driving down roads that were different. right? I just started, instead of taking Bumby, taking Paramore or Westmoreland, right? And began to see how 4 blocks away from my house, it looked completely different. And then when I go to the Boys and Girls Club, taking the time to make friends with the staff rather than just pass by them, and begin to integrate my life with people that are different from me. And now this is where empathy has the opportunity. If you don't engage it, and what's at risk, I contend, is that when you have a diverse experience of life that is like characterized by empathy for people that are different from you, you will simply like your life better. It is a fuller, more rich experience of life. You'll need less Netflix time. Like, you'll need less dollars. You'll have greater experiences. You'll watch fewer stories and you'll live more stories. Like, what's at risk is like really your level of satisfaction in life.
And do you think, so then, you know, we're programmed here in America, and a lot of entrepreneurs are to strive to scale, to, you know, launch, to sell.
Yeah.
Right? You know, we have this thing in our head, build, sell.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like this rat race of life that we accumulate and we buy things, and, you know, how big could our 401k get, or my real estate portfolio, and we're going down this path. How can you start, what advice do you have to start integrating empathy into your world and start being exposed to people? Like, what's a good place to start for someone who's like, I don't like my life.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm making money or I'm doing this, like, but I want to start exercising this empathy muscle, but I have no clue where to begin.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for them?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing I'll say is I don't think it's innately bad, the like build, sell, accumulate, build, sell, accumulate. I have friends who that's their like puzzle, yeah. Right? And they're very good at it and it is satisfying. And I think that's great because that's not the only aspect of things going on in their life, right? Like, like that's the puzzle that they like putting together, and then they have other pieces. And what I tell people is like the life that you want. So I'm not satisfied with my experience of life. I'd like to change it. The change almost always starts with things so small they seem like too silly to do, right? So it's way better to do a thing that feels small for a long time than do a thing that feels big for a very short period of time. So like when I said I wanted to impact the city, then I thought I don't need to reinvent the wheel, right? So let me find people who are doing good work and go to them and say, what are you not doing that you'd like to be doing? And what I ended up doing was like organizing an end of summer party for the Boys and Girls Club and organizing trash cleanups along Paramore Avenue with kids from the neighborhood centers, right? And I'll tell you, honestly, I didn't particularly want to do either one of those. Like on Saturdays, when it was the Saturday of the month to do the trash cleanup, I'd wake up and hope it would rain so I didn't have to go pick up trash on Paramore Avenue. I'd rather stay home and watch game day. But like what got me up out of the house was like that conviction, like, no, I have to like, I believe I'll like my life better when I am the sort of person who has an impact on the city, that doesn't sit on the couch and by himself or with people that look like him and watch a thing, but goes to experience something different with people that are different. And what happened over a period of 6-9 months of doing that is I got to the point where it was a rhythm that I enjoyed. And then I continued that project for like 7 years, once a month, doing trash cleanups with kids from the neighborhood. And it led to all sorts of stuff. And so if there are people listening who are like, man, I need something different happening, My advice would be pick a value or a virtue that you feel like will lead to fulfillment, and then find the smallest way you can to enact that and just keep doing it and see what comes next.
Yeah. You know? Commit to it over a long period of time.
Yeah, like, yes. Like, say, no, I am going to become a person of impact, and it doesn't matter whether anybody sees it or how big it is. It's just, like, about the authenticity of it. And so...
Yeah. What are some of the things that you're really passionate about? So probably coffee and fair trade, right? Yeah, I assume.
Yeah.
Creativity as a competitive advantage, social impact. But are there specific things that really tug on your heart, like that you're like, man, this is really important to me?
I mean,
those were a lot already.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Like the thing that comes to my mind is just like the work that I'm doing. This like mission of moving people towards meaning, impact, and community in whatever ways that I can. And so through all the entities that we talked about, right now, and then like delivering on being a dad and finding out ways to love my kids well and my wife well, you know.
Yeah. What's a good way for people to kind of find where they are passionate about? Like if they're like, I want to grow my empathy muscle, I want to get involved, I want to do something, I want to like myself more, I want to experience life and create stories rather than watch other people's stories. Like they're like, okay, you've got me, Ben. I want to go down this route, this path. I don't know where to begin. Like, how do people find their thing that they're passionate about in terms of empathy and giving?
Yeah.
Life.
I mean, I think like, you know, one way is like, for me, it was like sitting down and going, who would, like, what words describe the type of person I would like to be? Mm. Not that I think I'm supposed to be, or that someone's told me it would be good to be, or I feel like I actually am. Like, honestly, like, if I am this kind of person, then I'm enjoying my life. And that's how I came with meaning, impact, and community. So that's one way, is to make a couple of words and then go, what do these words mean to me? And so Downtown Credo has a credo. And it's my definition of meaning, impact, and community, right? And so then I wrote the definition of those three words, and then I said very practically, okay, how do I live this out? And that's how I ended up going to the Boys and Girls Club and flying to Guatemala and starting Rally Makers, was just trying to like be consistent and live out these three words. And so that's an advice I give people, is like, do the hard kind of personal quiet work of like figuring out what those core kind of values or character traits are for you. And rather than just kind of run to action, start with the philosophy and then build your action out of that kind of philosophy.
So those words then become your filter, what you say yes or no to in your life.
100%. I say yes to things that I have the capacity to do and that cultivate networks of meaning, impact, and community. Hmm.
Do you have maybe an exercise, so for people out there listening, and maybe even for myself, do you have any exercises that you take people through to help them find maybe one or two of their words that they could start like tattooing it on their heart and like really start to think through these things?
Yeah, so one of the things I've had people do is like list out your top seven roles that you play in life, right? Uh-huh. So like whether it's spouse, parent, citizen, son or daughter, like your top seven roles, right? And then in each of those, think about what like a role model for you, who's someone that you look up to in those roles. And then begin to ask yourself, why? Why do you look up to this type of father or this type of citizen? What is it about them that you admire? And you can start to pull out characteristics and traits from that practice. Mm.
I like that. It's finding the people that you admire, identifying it in yourself, and then finding the people you admire, and then saying like, why them? What is it? You know, and then kind of starting to form that.
Yep.
Out. Mm. Now you guys have special events at Conduit, at Credo, at Rally, like to bring these, the people of impact, meaning, and community, bring them together to create this network. Like, talk to us about maybe an event that you guys recently had or will have, coming up.
Yep. So Rally we do two accelerator cohorts a year. They're 4 months long, and we complete that with like a showcase of those social enterprises, and then we pick a best in show for each class, a best of class. And so that showcase is coming up on April 10th, our next one. Okay. And we have four companies that'll be presenting, and I'm really excited about all four of them. Uh, the last Friday of every month right now, Credo Coffee is doing coffee and talk, where I bring in two people from the broader Credo network and ask them questions about how they are pursuing meaning, impact, and community, and get in some conversation. So you can watch Credo Coffee's social media to find stuff about that.
What time is the April 10th event? I'll make sure that I put it in. Or you could just send me the information and we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, I think it starts at 6 p.m.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the last Friday of every month?
In the morning. At 8:30, yeah.
Okay. Could you, we'll include this information in the show notes. So if you're listening in, you know, go down to the show notes on your iPhone or Android or on the website or whatever, and you'll be able to see the information about these upcoming events. And if you want to participate and be around other people of impact, meaning, community, and kind of grow this network of people who care and who refuse to be apathetic to the pains of this world and pains of people who just don't look like them, I encourage you to check that out. Ben, this is, man, I didn't expect to have this kind of conversation with, you know, more tugging on the heart than...
Right.
And so I really appreciate that. What do you think is... let me think of how to ask this. Because you have three kids.
Yeah, that's right.
What do you think the impact that... the work that you're doing, what impact does it have on your kids?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that's been surprising for me is to see how quick they are to come up with business ideas. Like,
They might be entrepreneurs.
Yeah. So, like, you know, they want to start bookstores, or they're like figuring out how they can sell their bracelets that they make, or so they like the business idea. The other thing, they're very aware of the fact that I have more than one job, and so almost all of them, well, the two that are old enough to start saying these are the things that I want to do when I get older, have more than one. Like, they want to do two to three things, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that's pretty cool. And then they are kind of naturally accepting, because they've been around a lot of different types of people. And so, I mean, I don't really have a lot to compare it to, because they're my kids, and I can't really compare it to other kids. But it seems like they are aware of different types of people more than I was. So we'll see.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
If you could leave one piece of advice for the audience listening in, like one golden nugget that you're like, this is the most important thing, what would that piece of advice be for our listeners?
Well, that is a big...
That's a big question, yeah. Huh?
The one that I've been running with right now, it came out in our last Credo Coffee conversation that I mentioned, was this affirmation that self-sufficiency is a myth. And so it's something that I've been like playing around with in a lot of different areas of my life, trying to remind myself that the idea that I'm enough on, like, that I can get anything done on my own without other people, that's a myth. And so how that helps me is it challenges me to embrace the people around me in different ways, to listen to the people that are around me differently, to involve the people that are around me more deeply. Rather than this notion that I'm all out here by myself and I'm going to drag you all along with me whether you like it or not. No, nobody's out there by themselves. We are all in it with other people. It's whether or not we recognize it, own it, and embrace it. And so I would challenge people right now to think about who's in it, whatever it is, who's in it with them, and how are they working together with those folks.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So... ladies and gentlemen of the Orlando Entrepreneurs Podcast Show, thank you for listening in. I want to challenge you guys something. I want to challenge you to disrupt one of your mornings. I want you to head to Credo Coffee one morning, order a $100 latte.
That's right.
No, order a cup of coffee or your morning beverage, and I really want you to think. Just do this one time. Just think about the impact that you're having globally every time you make a purchase, like a cup of coffee. And I wanna hear your stories, and I'll share them with Ben. I wanna hear how this cup of coffee or how this new way of thinking about impact and social enterprise and empathy and versus apathy, I want to hear how this is potentially challenging you. So send in your questions, comments, outrages, whatever, you know, send them in, because let's start a conversation to see what comes of this. So the next time you go in to order a $100 latte and you go up to Credo Coffee and you say, I'd like a latte, and they ask you a question, they go, how much would you like to pay with this? Let it start a good conversation that you share with your friends, your family, and with us, and we can figure out how to make Orlando a better place and how to potentially make this world a better place. Ben, any questions that I should have asked you that I totally just missed?
No, you killed it. That was great.
Oh, good. Yeah. Thanks, man. I appreciate it. I should have a podcast
That's
show.
That's right.
Okay, good. Good. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thanks for listening in. I encourage you to go down to Credo Coffee, order a cup of coffee, and then let us know what sparks out of that. Let this be a spark of a conversation to initiate that. And also check out Rally, Credo Coffee in the Conduit co-working place. And two events coming up. One, April 10th. You can go watch a few social entrepreneurs pitch about their business and learn about it. They do it twice a year. And then the last Friday of every month at Credo Coffee, they bring in speakers and talk about impact, empathy, and the world as we know it and how to make it a better place. So I hope you've enjoyed this, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll talk with you all on the next episode. All right, Ben. Hey, thanks for being on the show, man.
Thanks, Josh. It was fun.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you for listening in on today's episode. If you would like to be a guest on the show or start up a conversation with me, Josh, your host, send me an email to josh@orlandoentrepreneurs.org. You can also find out more information on Orlando's entrepreneurial ecosystem, discover resources to help you start and grow your business, and subscribe to future shows by visiting www.orlandoentrepreneurs.org.